Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to be taking a look at one single source. It's called the Crisis Report 96, and really going to be kind of digging into its insights on the current state of climate change. This report is written by an independent analyst named Richard Krim, and his take is known for being pretty unfiltered and different from sort of the usual narratives that we see, in a lot of mainstream media or even academic
Yeah,
journals.
I could see that. So Krim definitely has a reputation for being outspoken.
Yeah, so think of this as a raw kind of inside look at where we stand.
Like it.
And we've got some pretty intriguing things to kind of unpack today, like his predictions for 2050, how the recent US election plays into all this, and what he calls Plan B for a world that's on the brink of collapse.
That's an interesting choice for a deep dive.
Yeah.
Krim's perspective is unique because he isn't bound by the usual constraints of, academic journals or media outlets. He's just giving us a direct and sometimes challenging analysis of the data as he sees it.
It's interesting. This report opens with a pretty provocative statement
Right.
about the recent election.
Okay.
What struck you about Krim's take on this? I mean, he says that climate change was practically ignored during the election, and he sees that as a dangerous refusal to kind of face the crisis. He even calls it a vote for collapse, which is a pretty strong statement.
Well, it's certainly a strong statement, but I can see where he's coming from. Krim's observation about the election connects to this much larger and more complex history of climate denial, especially in the U.S. There's deep-seated political and social factors at play here. Some people just distrust science. Some have economic anxieties, and then there's even this sense of exceptionalism. This idea that America is somehow immune to global consequences.
That Fortress America idea that he talks about.
Yeah.
So his point is that these attitudes are really making it hard to take meaningful action both within the US and then also on a global scale.
Makes sense.
And then he goes on to make another alarming point. The planet is warming faster than we expected, and he cites data from the Copernicus Climate Change Service showing that the Earth has been over plus 1.5 degrees Celsius for 18 months straight.
Wow.
And get this, the rate of warming has jumped to plus 0.36 degrees Celsius per decade.
That's significant.
That's massive acceleration. And then he brings up those intense boreal forest fires in 2023, which released a ton of CO2 into the atmosphere. And then, of
Yeah,
course, there's the
yeah.
thawing permafrost pumping out methane, which
Hearing
is a
about that.
huge concern.
The data Krim presents is definitely worrying. We've passed a crucial point. And those tipping points we've been discussing, they're no longer theoretical. They're happening now. This accelerated warming means we'll see more extreme weather events, and they're going to be more intense as well. We're talking about rising sea levels, disruptions to agriculture. I mean, the consequences are vast. And the methane release from permafrost, I mean, that's a potential feedback loop that can make warming even faster. It's a scenario that's keeping a lot of scientists awake at night.
It does feel like we're on this runaway train that keeps speeding up. But here's where things get really interesting.
Right.
Krim compares two very different outlooks for the future. What he calls the mainstream moderate view, which predicts slow and manageable warming, even if we take action later, versus James Hansen's alarmist view. And Hansen paints a much bleaker picture, with something like plus 10 degrees Celsius of warming in equilibrium. So it's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's a pretty stark contrast. This tension between the moderates and the alarmists kind of reflects the inherent uncertainties that come with climate modeling. Keep in mind, models are tools. They're not crystal balls. And there's always a range of possible outcomes. The moderate models often assume we'll achieve net zero emissions relatively soon and that ocean processes will be slow. Hansen, however, emphasizes the warming potential. That's already locked in by existing greenhouse gases and the impact of reducing aerosols, which actually have a cooling effect right now.
So basically, it comes down to which assumptions you believe are more likely, which model seems more plausible to you given what we're seeing right now.
That's a tough question, and it's one that scientists are grappling with. The challenge for all of us is to make decisions despite this uncertainty, knowing that the stakes are incredibly high.
And that leads us to Krim's most controversial idea,
okay,
geoengineering. He says it's too late for conventional solutions,
yeah,
and that we have to consider drastic measures, specifically using SOx aerosols to make Earth reflect more sunlight. He even cites James Hansen again. Who supports this as a last resort?
Geoengineering is a very controversial topic, and for good reason. Mm. I mean, it essentially means deliberately altering the Earth's atmosphere, and that could have unforeseen consequences.
Yeah, it's like opening Pandora's box.
Mm-hmm.
But Krim argues we're already in uncharted territory. He even urges readers to prepare for societal collapse by 2050.
Wow.
This isn't just about the planet anymore. It's about human survival. He believes the next 25 years will be a period of rapid and intense collapse, with the global population plummeting, widespread food shortages, and the breakdown of civilization as we know it.
So Krim's call to action, to have a plan B in the face of potential collapse, it really forces us to confront some tough questions.
It does.
What does it mean to prepare for such a scenario? How do we make decisions, both individually and as a society, when the future is so uncertain?
These are huge questions, and to be honest, they're a little terrifying. But you know, as they say, knowledge is power, right? Even if it's unsettling, it's better to be informed and prepared than to be caught off guard.
I agree.
What stands out to you from what we've covered so far?
Well, I think what's important to remember is that even though Krim's perspective is quite bleak, he's not the only voice out there, it's essential to be aware of these potential risks, even the extreme ones. But it's also important to consider other viewpoints and potential solutions.
That's a good point, and that's exactly what we're doing here on The Deep Dive. We're exploring these complicated issues, even the scary ones, to help you navigate the world with a bit more understanding and hopefully a sense of agency.
Because even in the face of uncertainty, we still have choices to make. And understanding the full range of possibilities allows us to make more informed decisions.
Well said. Now, Krim doesn't just focus on the scientific side of things. He also highlights the human element, particularly the role of political choices in either speeding up or slowing down the climate crisis. He brings up the recent U.S. election again, arguing that the outcome could have serious consequences for global action on climate change. So let's talk about that.
Picking up where we left off, Krim's report really zeroes in on the impact of U.S. politics on the climate crisis. He argues that the country's shift away from climate leadership could have a ripple effect, with other nations feeling less pressure to take action. Which could weaken global cooperation, even makes a pretty strong accusation, suggesting that the U.S. is essentially saying to the rest of the world, we don't care if you die.
Those are just some harsh words. But they do reflect the frustration and anger that a lot of people feel, especially in those parts of the world that are already experiencing the most severe effects of climate change. Krim contrasts the Trump administration's approach of boosting fossil fuel production and withdrawing from the Paris Agreement with the Biden-Harris administration's efforts to address the climate crisis through legislation like the Inflation Reduction Act. It feels like a bit of a tug of war, doesn't it?
It does. And this political divide really underscores how crucial it is to understand the various perspectives and agendas involved. Mm-hmm. Krim clearly views the Trump administration's policies as a setback, potentially jeopardizing global efforts to limit warming. He also expresses concerns about funding for renewable energy and climate mitigation projects in the U.S., given the uncertainty surrounding their future.
Right. It's like we're swinging back and forth while the clock keeps ticking. Mm. Krim even argues that the Inflation Reduction Act, though a positive step, was too little too late. He specifically calls out the lack of investment in making infrastructure more resilient, pointing to the example of bridges and dams that urgently need repairs to withstand increasingly extreme weather events.
Krim's focus on infrastructure really highlights the tangible, real-world impacts of climate change.
Yeah.
It's not just about abstract temperature targets. It's about the systems that underpin our daily lives. Mm-hmm. Transportation, energy, water supply, all being affected.
Exactly. It's a stark reminder that this isn't some distant future problem. It's happening right now in our communities, and it's only going to get worse. Makes you think about Krim's idea of a plan B. What does he actually suggest people do to get ready for this potential collapse?
Well, Krim's plan B is less about specific actions and more about a shift in mindset.
Okay.
He encourages his readers to start thinking in terms of collapse, to accept that the world we know is rapidly changing and to prepare for a future characterized by scarcity and uncertainty.
Now, in part two of the report, he dives into the scientific data and compares two very different outlooks. Mm. He analyzes reports from what he calls the mainstream moderate camp and another from James Hansen, a well-known climate scientist who tends to have a more alarmist view.
Mm-hmm.
This section gets quite technical with terms like RCP 8.5, CO2e, and slow ocean processes. Can you break this down for us in a way that's easier to understand?
Okay, let's unpack that.
Yeah.
RCP 8.5 is a scenario used by climate scientists to model a future with very high greenhouse gas emissions.
Oh, okay.
Essentially, it's a worst-case scenario, but one that's unfortunately not out of the realm of possibility.
Right.
CO2e is shorthand for carbon dioxide equivalent, a way of measuring all the greenhouse gases together in terms of their warming impact, kind of like using a common currency. Now, the moderates, as represented in a paper from the Access ESM 1.5 project, believe that even if we achieve net zero emissions later, say by 2050 or even 2060, the warming will eventually slow down and become more manageable. Their models predict that after an initial warming spike, the rate of temperature increase will significantly drop to about 0.05 degrees CAC per century. They attribute this slowdown to the gradual release of heat stored in the oceans.
So they're basically counting on the oceans to act like a giant heat sink, absorbing the excess heat and preventing runaway warming.
Right.
But what about Hansen's view? How does that differ?
Hansen and his colleagues in their paper, Global Warming in the Pipeline, challenge that optimistic outlook. They argue that the moderates are underestimating the warming potential. That's already locked in due to the existing greenhouse gases, even if we stopped emitting them today. They also point to the fact that aerosol levels in the atmosphere are declining. Now remember, aerosols are pollutants, but they actually have a cooling effect because they reflect sunlight.
Yeah.
As we clean up our air, which is a good thing, this cooling effect diminishes,
right,
which could lead to faster warming.
It's a bit of a catch-22 then. Cleaning up the air is good for our health, but could actually accelerate warming in the short term. That's pretty thought-provoking.
It is. Hansen's team estimates that the equilibrium warming for today's greenhouse gas levels is around plus 10 degrees Celsius, but that's currently offset by about plus 2 degrees due to the aerosols. However, as those aerosol levels drop, that offset will decrease, leading to faster warming.
So essentially, Hansen's view is that we're already locked into a certain amount of warming, and it's going to happen faster than the moderates predict, even if we reach net zero emissions. Krim seems to lean more towards Hansen's perspective, doesn't he?
He does.
He even describes the moderate view as delusional and accuses mainstream climate science of misleading policymakers and the public. It sounds like he's suggesting that this is why we're not seeing the urgent action that's needed to address the crisis.
Yes, Krim's frustration is palpable. He sees a disconnect between the scientific data, which he believes paints a very dire picture, and the slow pace of political action. He even goes so far as to suggest that the moderates might be downplaying the risks to avoid causing panic or disrupting the status quo.
It makes you wonder, are we being lulled into a false sense of security? He even brings up a point about how we got the science wrong back in the 1970s, leading to an energy policy built around fossil fuels instead of nuclear power. He seems to be implying that we're repeating the same mistakes today by clinging to overly optimistic scenarios and delaying action.
That's a very interesting point. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a sobering thought, to be honest. If Krim is right and we're misjudging the situation, then the consequences could be even more severe than we realize. It adds another layer of urgency to this whole discussion.
It certainly does. And it brings us back to Krim's call for a plan B. He argues that we need to be honest about the risks, even if they're uncomfortable, and prepare for a future that might be radically different from the one we're accustomed to. But what does that actually look like? What does he suggest people do to get ready for this potential collapse?
Well, he paints a pretty bleak picture. He predicts that by 2050, the global population could plummet to under a billion. Agricultural output would decline drastically, and civilization as we know it would break down. He believes this collapse will be rapid and intense, driven by accelerating climate change, resource depletion, and social unrest.
His timeline is certainly alarming. What are some of the things he suggests people do to prepare?
His plan B is less about specific actions and more about a fundamental shift in mindset. He urges readers to start thinking in terms of collapse, to accept that the world as we know it may be rapidly changing, and to prepare for a future of scarcity and uncertainty.
It sounds like a call for both individual and collective action. What are some of the individual steps he recommends?
He advises people to focus on building resilience in their communities, acquiring practical skills, and strengthening social connections. He also encourages people to enjoy the good things they have now, because things might get much tougher in the future. He even says that after 2030, most people will likely face chronic hunger, unless they are wealthy.
It's a stark warning, for sure. It makes you think about your own priorities and what's truly important in life. But it's important to remember that Krim's vision is just one possible scenario. While his warning should be taken seriously, it's also essential to stay informed about other perspectives and potential solutions.
Absolutely, there's still time to act, to make different choices, and to work towards a more sustainable future. But even if we manage to avoid the worst-case scenarios, Krim's report serves as a powerful reminder that we're living in a time of profound change, and we need to be prepared for a future that may be radically different from the present.
And that requires a willingness to adapt, to learn, and to challenge our assumptions. We need to be open to new ideas, even those that make us uncomfortable. And we need to engage in open and honest dialogue about the challenges we face.
I couldn't agree more. Speaking of challenging ideas, Krim's Plan B doesn't stop at individual preparedness. He also explores larger scale solutions, like geoengineering, to mitigate the most severe impacts of climate change. Let's dive into that next. So we've talked about, you know, individual preparedness, but Krim also brings up geoengineering as a potential large-scale solution. Specifically, he focuses on using SOx aerosols to increase Earth's reflectivity, almost like creating a giant sunshade, you know? He sees this as a last resort to cool the planet down. And while he acknowledges the risks and ethical questions, he argues that we might get to a point where it's our only option. He even quotes James Hansen, who calls for drastic cuts to CO2 emissions and advocates for essentially turning the sky white with sulfate particles. Sounds pretty radical, doesn't it?
It does sound like something out of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it speaks to the level of urgency Krim feels. He believes we've reached a point where we need to consider every possible option, even those that seem unthinkable.
But geoengineering is incredibly controversial. It feels like we'd be playing God with the planet. And there's no guarantee it would work the way we intend.
You're right. It's a highly complex issue with huge potential consequences. And the ethical considerations are massive.
Right.
Who gets to decide if we deploy these technology? Who bears the responsibility if something goes wrong? These are tough questions without easy answers.
It seems like this gets to the heart of the climate crisis. You know, it's not just a scientific challenge. It's a human one. It's about our values, our priorities, and our responsibility to future generations. It forces us to ask, what kind of future do we want to create?
Absolutely, and it requires us to confront some uncomfortable truths about our role in this crisis. We've benefited from a system built on fossil fuels and unsustainable consumption, and we've been slow to change. But Krim's report doesn't just point fingers. He also highlights the potential for human ingenuity and cooperation to find solutions. Even when the challenges seem overwhelming, he points to the rapid development of renewable energy technologies and the growing global awareness of the climate crisis as reasons for hope.
So he's not entirely pessimistic. He sees the potential for positive change, but he emphasizes that it will require a fundamental shift in how we think and behave.
Yes, and I think that's a key takeaway from Krim's work. He's not just predicting doom and gloom. He's prompting us to think critically about our choices and actions, both individually and collectively. He wants us to be active participants in shaping the future, not passive bystanders.
Exactly. And that leads us to the more personal side of his report. You know, it's not just data and analysis. It's also a deeply personal reflection on what it means to live in a time of such profound change. He even shares his own shifting perspective on the climate crisis, admitting that he once believed collapse would be a gradual process, but now feels we're headed for a rapid and intense one, largely influenced by the recent U.S. election.
I find that part of the report particularly striking. He talks about feeling grief, loss, and even anger at the lack of action from those in power. He describes participating in these private online groups with analysts and government employees, and how even in those circles, there's a growing acceptance that a significant decline in the human population is inevitable. It's a glimpse behind the curtain, revealing a sense of urgency and concern that's not always reflected in public discourse.
It's almost like there's this unspoken agreement that things are much worse than we're willing to admit openly. It makes you wonder, what are the implications of this knowledge? How do we grapple with it on a personal level?
Well, Krim talks about the need to find meaning and purpose, even in a world facing collapse. He asks his readers to consider what they want to do with the time they have left, to focus on the things that truly matter.
Yeah.
And to build strong connections with the people around them.
It's a powerful message. Even amidst the bleakness of his predictions, it's not about giving up or losing hope. It's about finding what gives your life meaning and purpose in the face of uncertainty.
Exactly. And that's where his report goes beyond just being a warning. It's an invitation to have a deeper conversation about what it means to be human in a time of unprecedented change.
He doesn't shy away from presenting a challenging perspective, and he ends by urging readers to seriously consider the possibility that he might be right, even if his views seem extreme. He acknowledges that his words might be hard to accept, but he wants people to truly grasp the gravity of the situation.
It's a bold way to conclude the report. Whether or not you agree with Krim's predictions, he raises important questions that we all need to grapple with. How do we understand the climate crisis and its potential consequences? How do we find balance between urgency and hope? And how do we live meaningful lives in a world that feels increasingly uncertain?
Those are profound questions that we each have to answer for ourselves. But Krim's report gives us a framework for starting these conversations. It reminds us that we're not just watching the climate crisis unfold. We're active participants in shaping the future.
And ultimately, that's what makes the Crisis Report 96 so compelling. It's not just a report. It's a catalyst for dialogue, a challenge to our assumptions, and a call to action. It pushes us to confront uncomfortable truths, reevaluate our priorities, and think deeply about what truly matters in a world facing profound change.
I think that's a great place to leave it. Richard Kerman believes the next 25 years will be a period of rapid and intense collapse, while others envision a slower, more managed transition. We encourage you to reflect on these different perspectives and consider what future you see unfolding. And most importantly, think about how this knowledge impacts your choices and actions today. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep the conversation going.